Okay, we're going to take your phone calls this hour with Catherine Albrecht. Your questions, your stories. Have you had a situation with a chipped credit card or something like that? Check in with us when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Catherine Albrecht with us, of course, and we'll get to your calls in just a second as we talk about privacy issues and safety issues. Are there other countries that are fighting back against this, Catherine, or are they all in this thing together?
Well, you know, unfortunately, this is really being driven by the U.S., and we're really exporting this technology and these concepts into other countries. I think probably no country has embraced the notion of RFID tracking as fully as China, and their high-tech city of Shenzhen has actually become an RFID tracking nightmare. They've got the RFID tags in all of the Chinese identity cards. They can be read by Chinese law enforcement officials from across the street. They actually, on those identity cards, they can read remotely what somebody's name and all the normal information on your driver's license would be, but also your educational background, your landlord's phone number, all kinds of personal information. And they've even embedded the reader devices, according to reports, into lampposts and walls and buildings. So you're walking down the street and the actual environment is reading your driver's license. It's creepy.
It is just happening way too fast. What is the fuel behind this? Is it, you know, the computer business companies? Who's pushing it?
Well, you know, right now the big money is in defense. It's in security. It's in keeping people secure or giving them a feeling of security. And I think the reason that so much money is being spent on that is because everybody's feeling uneasy. And whether we're feeling uneasy because of a real threat or just because we're feeling threatened by the speed that the world is changing, or we're feeling threatened by the creepy movies we're watching, whatever it is, there's a huge market for reassuring people, we'll keep you safe. And I think that is why these technologies have become so popular and so ubiquitous. It's the idea that if Big Brother's watching me, I mean, that's really what 1984 was about. Big Brother's watching to keep you safe. If Big Brother's always watching, then nothing can hurt you. And I guess what people are forgetting, well, it's probably Big Brother himself who's going to wind up hurting you. That's the problem.
You're doing your own little radio show, aren't you? I shouldn't say little.
Yeah, well, I'm actually on a couple dozen radio stations around the country. I broadcast live every weekday afternoon between 4 and 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And on my website at CatherineAlbrecht.com, there's a link right on there that's got a telephone listen number and a link where people can hear the show.
The book Spy Chips, which was a bestseller, what got you to write it? I mean, what got you into this field?
Well, you know what happened? I was actually working on supermarket frequent shopper cards. I think I did my first interview with you back in 2002 or 3 on that topic.
Yeah, way back.
Way, way back when. And the supermarket frequent shopper cards, people don't really think about them, but what they did was they changed the nature of cash registers in retail stores around the world, in every country, so that the cash registers aren't just calculators with a cash drawer where they just calculate and take your money, but they've actually become ubiquitously networked high-speed computers that are now set up, thanks to the frequent shopper card at the grocery store, are now set up to take your identity and make you prove your identity through a number in order to buy groceries. And so that was kind of how I got started. I said, wait, this is going to lead to the mark of the beast, because if you're going to put a system in place that requires a number to buy and sell, then you obviously have to put the cash registers in place to receive the numbers to buy and sell. And that's what the frequent shopper card did. Those things are now in Vietnam, Yemen, Korea, Colombia, Jamaica, you name it. Every country on the globe now has cash registers that can accept a unique ID number to identify who you are to sell you food. So that's creepy. And then the RFID thing I found out because I was researching cards, and I read this really disturbing quote by A.C. Nielsen, the market research company. And they said, first there were barcodes, which told the store what was being sold. Then there was the frequent shopper card that told us who was buying it. But there's a new technology called RFID, and it's going to tell us how people use the products they buy in their own homes. And my eyes went wide, and they went, what? What are they talking about? How are they going to know that? And that's how I began to research RFID. And I crashed a couple of meetings that were being held at MIT, where I was actually attending classes as a Harvard graduate student. So I went to some of the meetings. I literally walked into the meetings and just sat in the back and took notes, and I was freaked out by what they were talking about. And they actually had one meeting that I went to, George. It had 500 business executives, literally top executives of their companies, talking about how they were going to introduce this secretly so nobody could stop them and nobody would find out. You think this only happens in movies. It happened in real life. God. And that's when I said that no, you're not going to get away with it. I'm going to do whatever it takes to let people know. And that's exactly what we did.
Good for you. Because, you know, I got to tell you, there aren't a lot of people like you out there, Catherine, beating the drums, pushing the issue, and making this well known.
Yeah, it's
they're just not out there.
Part of it was nobody knew about it because this really was based on secrecy. And because the RFID tags can be hidden, and that's what Target's going to be doing, they can slip them into the soles of your shoe, or they could drop it into the cardboard of a box and put it between the layers of paper. You'd never know it was there. And what they actually discussed as their plan was they were going to secretly slip this stuff into all of our products and then wait a couple of years. And if somebody found out, they'd go, oh, that old thing, we've been doing that for years. Where have you been?
Yeah,
and
no
at that point,
deal.
It'd be too late to take it back.
Good point. All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Buck in Limestone, West Virginia. Buck, thanks for calling. You're on the Wild Card line.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure thing, Buck.
Here's the thing. I've been filling out these Arbitron and Nielsen books for years.
Mm-hmm.
And those used to be they'd send me quarters. Now and then lately, they'd send me $2 bills. And if to me, if this is just a way to streamline that, where, I mean, I don't like not getting the money, but if it's a way to streamline that, I'm not too bent out of shape about the whole thing, to be honest with you.
Well, most of those rating services now are going electronic, where they give you a little device, and, you know, you are recorded that way in the rating systems. But I don't think, Catherine, what he's talking about is very serious at all. That's a different issue, don't you think?
Yeah, so what you're talking about, George, is probably a bigger issue because I also participated in one of those trials. You had to fill out the booklet of what TV channel you watched, and nowadays they have something called the Portable People Meter, or the PPM.
Yep.
And what it is it's a bracelet that you wear on your wrist, and it listens to everything. It's got a microphone, and it listens to everything that you hear. So if you're listening to the radio, people don't realize this, but on the radio, on mainstream top 40 stations, they're playing little tones. They're inaudible to the human ear, but they're picked up by the Portable People Monitor. And so as you're driving in your car with the radio on, or you're washing the dishes, or you're washing the car, it's hearing this little signal, and it makes a note in this piece of electronics on your wrist what you're listening to. And then you have to download this information back to the company. So that starts getting really weird. And what we found when we were researching spy chips is that there are plans to put RFID tags in books and magazines and other things that you might handle or read or interact with. And then your wrist bracelet actually becomes an RFID reader, and it knows that you read Time magazine and held it in your hands for 30 minutes when you were in the waiting room. So it's just another way that they want to be able to monitor every single fact that was in our heads and everything we listen to.
This is primarily for Bev Harris from Black Box Voting, but when, Catherine, do we get to the point where voting will be done by a touch tone on your phone?
Yeah, or when do we get to the point where you're just going to think of the candidate you want to vote for? By the way, Bev Harris is one of my favorite people. She's a personal friend of mine, and
oh,
she does really good work. And, you know, what she raises is the issue of once things become electronic, they no longer can be monitored, that you put the control in the hands of the people who run the technology. And one of the big concerns I have is when we have the smart home of the future, driverless cars, and all these things that they say are coming, they're going to be out of our control. And if we think it's bad now that we go to the ballot box and we can't trust that they're really recording our votes accurately, what's going to happen when we're getting into the Google driverless car and the government decides, you know, we're just going to drive you straight to the local precinct and arrest you?
Yeah, that's me. And the car locks the doors.
Yes.
You can't open them. And off
they
go.
That'd be a good movie.
I love it. Let's go to Harry in Port Huron, Michigan. Harry, welcome to the show. You're on with Catherine Albrecht on Coast to Coast.
Good morning. I'm not really laughing, quite frankly, at some of your comments, Catherine. first of all, I'll get to my point, but the driverless car, some of us out here need that. We're disabled. It would be nice to have such a vehicle.
If they work. I'm not sure they will, Harry.
Well, you have to go read
accidents.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Secondly, the problem with your smart mail and your smart page search, even though it's nice about the privacy, if somebody's breaking the law, make it a drug deal through email, et cetera, or searching for bombs and guns and how to do terrorism, aren't you contributing to breaking the law?
Well, first of all, I should clarify, it's not smart page because usually when something's smart, it's a surveillance device like a smartphone. It's start page, like start protecting your privacy. So it's START, start page, and that's the private search engine. So the question that you're raising is, if it's taken to its logical conclusion that we need to watch things in the on the off chance that someone commits a crime with it, if you take that to its logical conclusion, then I'm going to have to put a camera in your living room and in your bedroom and in your bathroom to make sure that you don't ever commit a crime that I can't observe or I can't witness. And there are certain things that I think we as a society agree. You have the right to have your own thoughts. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to free information. It's why we have privacy in our libraries. And it's one thing to look something up and get information. It's quite another thing to go out there and actually commit a crime. And we make a very strong distinction there. So I don't have a problem with people looking up information. I don't have a problem with people locking their doors and having privacy in their own homes. We're going to have to draw the line somewhere.
Catherine, under the auspices of terrorism, have they tricked us, in your opinion?
You mean tricked us into believing that there's more terrorism going on than there really is?
Yes, to make us simply say, okay, go ahead, do what you have to do.
Well, you know, it's certainly, if you want to gain control over your own population, the best way to do that is to have an enemy. And whether that enemy is a real enemy and you just beat the drum louder and make the enemy hate you more so you stir things up, or whether you have to invent the enemy, we know historically, even the Reichstag fire, which happened under the Nazis before World War II, the reason that the Nazis themselves set that fire was to convince the German people that the Jews were their enemies. And so they're regardless of where it's coming from or how it's happening, it's in the best interest of the government to have us all very, very afraid all the time. Because when you're afraid, if your very survival is at stake, things like freedom start mattering very little. If you're thinking about, am I going to get blown up or shot? Go ahead, take my freedom, just keep me from being killed. And so I think that's why we're being constantly convinced that we're at risk at every moment. And as I've said before on the show, the most deadly force on planet Earth in the 20th century was not terrorists or criminals or rapists. It was government itself. In fact, governments in the 20th century killed 6 times more people than all of the century's wars combined. So when government has too much control over you, you get the Soviet Union, where Stalin killed 60 million people. You get Nazi Germany, where Hitler killed countless tens of millions. You get nasty situations when government has too much power. And that's why the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution to rein in and control government and put a leash on it so it wouldn't become too powerful, because that becomes dangerous.
Mark, Santa Monica, California. Thanks for calling. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, George. What a great topic.
Sure is.
I totally resonate with a lot of what everyone is saying. I mean, I'm like second generation in terms. I'm a big radio fan. I've been listening to talk radio since I was a little kid. My father used to run ABC radio in New York when I was a little kid in the 70s. And this is before cell phones and before the internet and before all of these complicated factors that now are, you know, becoming such both an asset as well as a detriment to society in general, that we're actually having this conversation right now. I mean, I have the Samsung smartphone watch. I have the Galaxy telephone. I have all of these devices, which are like personal locating, personal monitors, and I wonder, you know, are the powers that be, do the people that we elect have the emotional maturity to be able to be entrusted with this kind of information? Because like you were saying, as long as people are not doing anything wrong in terms of society, as long as they're not committing crimes, we have nothing to worry about. Or do we, is the question.
Yeah, so my take on that, whenever people say, well, if I'm not doing anything wrong, then I don't care if they're watching me, the Constitution and our whole rule of law, our whole system of jurisprudence is based on the opposite, that if you're not doing anything wrong, nobody should watch you. Nobody should have the right to watch you unless you are doing something wrong and they can actually prove it. And at that point, they have to go and get a warrant in order to watch you. So what's happened is we ourselves have put these prison bars on ourselves. We are the ones installing the drop cams from Google in our own living rooms, in our own bedrooms, for heaven's sake, and allowing Google to capture footage and record our conversations in our own homes. You know, we just talked about Joseph Stalin. He would have had to pay a fortune and get all kinds of soldiers to come and beat down your door and force people to accept that kind of surveillance during the Soviet era, and people would have resisted it and they would have tried to get rid of it. But nowadays, these companies are so clever. They've packaged these devices in such a way that we can't wait to get them, and we literally pay them for the privilege of installing the surveillance devices all around us. So that's really the issue. And when you talk about you've got all these technologies, you know, I got to tell you, the thing that I would probably pray for most, and I would say this is for you, Mark, and also for all the listeners, would be for discernment, that there's a spiritual component to this stuff that's coming. And if we have discernment, see, if we just listen to the marketing messages and we just look for what's cool, we're going to love all this stuff. I mean, it's empowering and it's fun and it keeps you entertained and it gives you lots of abilities. But if you ask for that spiritual discernment, help me, God, to see what is the spiritual impact of these technologies. Help me to see the spirit behind them. And I think at that point, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to install a self-driving unit in your car, or I want to put this chip in your hand, or I want to put this microchip in your brain, then a part of you is going to instantly, the spiritual part of you is going to go, that's not right. Something about that feels really wrong. And so I would encourage people to pray for discernment, because I think that's what we need in this day and age. The Bible tells us that all people will be deceived. And if it were possible, even the elect, even the people chosen by God, even his own people would be deceived if it were possible. But fortunately, he makes it so that they are not deceived. And that's what we need to pray for.
Catherine, I remember going to the grocery store as a little boy with my mother, and the cash register person had to, literally the cashier had to do everything by hand on every product. And then, of course, we went to barcodes, and I thought, boy, is this something. Look how fast this works. This is amazing. So how many people would love this if you just took your shopping cart and with just one scan, boop, just like that, everything's there and you leave in seconds? I bet a lot of people would say go for it.
Absolutely. And you know that IBM ad that ran like 10 years ago was an ad for the RFID-enabled future. And it was the ad where the guy, he's wearing a trench coat and he looks like a criminal and he's putting things in his coat.
Yeah.
And then he, instead of going through the cash register, he just walks through the door. And then the security guy like ominously is going after him. And then he taps him on the shoulder. The guy turns around and he says, "You forgot your receipt." And what IBM is trying to say is that there will be a future point where you can literally just put stuff in your pocket, and when you walk through the door will detect every single item. You'll have some kind of microchip on or in you that's going to automatically deduct your bank account, and everything is going to just be automatic. And I don't know, to me that does not seem like an appealing thing. I would probably rather stand in line. We call it around here the privacy tax, that I'd rather stand in line or go through the cash lane at the toll booth and preserve my privacy than usher in something that's probably not going to be good in the long run.
We will take more phone calls when we roll right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Catherine Albrecht with us. It's our final segment, so we'll get to your calls as quickly as we can. I would guess, Catherine, that most people are concerned, not to a point where they're panicking, but I think they're getting concerned about all of this. What do you think?
I refer to it as kind of feeling the hot breath of the predator.
Yes, on your neck.
Yeah, I think we're definitely sensing that there's something. And in fact, even some of the top scientists, like Elon Musk, the guy who created SpaceX and the Tesla motor cars, and Stephen Hawking, the physicist. They've both come out and said that we are on the verge of creating the unstoppable monster that's actually going to destroy humanity in the form of robotics and artificial intelligence. And that's really what comes in to animate the system. Once we've built its eyes and ears and installed them in every aspect of our lives, then we create the intelligence to come in and occupy it. And while they may think that it's going to be an artificial human-created intelligence, the Bible tells us it's going to be Satan himself who's going to come in and embody these technologies and imbue them with his own intelligence and his own spirit. And at that point, when even Stephen Hawking, and he's about as legitimate of a physicist and
as you can get,
and when he's telling us this is going to spell the end of humanity if we don't put the brakes on it, then I think everybody's feeling nervous.
Yeah, I think so too. But, you know, as we were talking right before the break, people are going to get tricked with conveniences. I think if you're in a shopping center and people can go through in seconds with just like that, they're going to say, hey, I like this. This isn't the sign of the beast for me. But it's going to catch up to us, I think, in the long run, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And this is why I wrote the book, I Won't Take the Mark, which is for kids, because our generation really is the last one to know anything about biblical prophecy. This is something that people have known about for 2,000 years. And the church has always been looking for the number to buy and sell and the mark on the right hand forever. I mean, thousands and thousands of pages written, you know, pretty much every year all throughout history. And then this generation, when we finally have the capacity to actually do it, just happens coincidentally to be the first generation that has no clue what this is. You know, you can ask any child, what is the mark of the beast? You can ask any teenager, any young adult, and they'll say, the what of the, huh? I have no idea.
They don't know.
Yeah, and so this is why I wrote I Won't Take the Mark, which is at virtuepress.com. It's also available on Amazon. But what it is it's a way to help explain King James Scripture so that you can actually understand what this sometimes difficult to understand book, the book of Revelation, actually warns us about, and you can see how it's actually coming. So it's illustrated. It's a straightforward book. It's not just for little kids. It could be for teenagers, even for adults. I've had a lot of adults read it and say, thank you, I finally understand it now. And, you know, this is what I think we need, the discernment. We need the recognition, because if we don't have the knowledge, then the whiz-bang amazingness of these technologies is going to win out. Even though we have a creepy feeling, we won't know why. And so this book really is about pick up your Bible, figure out why it feels creepy, because this was predicted a long time ago, and it's the end game.
Let's go to Jim, east of the Rockies, Beaumont, Texas. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling. Good morning to you.
Hi, George. Thank you very much for taking my call, and hello, Kathleen. This is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart, and I have a kind of a different twist on what everybody else is thinking on this.
Okay. What is that?
One, it says that the Antichrist is going to come from the land of the dragon. A lot of people think that that's going to be China. But unfortunately, if you look at Google Earth and spin it around, the North American continent looks like a dragon in flight. And back in the day, they didn't use our English numbers of 666. The easiest way for somebody to portray that would have been six lines. And if you turn a Social Security number into a barcode, it becomes 18 lines. And therefore, we have all this technology right now where you can scan your thumbprint to get into your phone. They don't need to put a chip in us because we already have the mark. It's our Social Security number. And therefore, people are going to say, oh, I can scan my thumbprint at the ATM, or I can scan my thumbprint at the grocery store, and it'll come right out of my bank account. And, you know, it's real simple. We've been tricked into it because we've had to have either a Social Security number or a taxpayer's ID number for how many years?
We have been tricked into it, and I've always thought, Catherine, you're... Social Security number might have been that mark of the beast.
You know, a lot of people said that in the 1930s, after the Great Depression, when the Social Security number was first introduced. And in fact, there was a lot of opposition to it. They said, wait a minute, the government can't issue unique ID numbers to people. That's going to lead to the mark of the beast. That's written in the Bible. And it really was the first example, at least in this country, of any kind of widespread numbering system where people were assigned a number. And as you know, you can't buy and sell if you don't have any income, and you can't have an income in this country unless you have a Social Security number. Now, is it actually the mark of the beast? No, because the mark of the beast has to be on the right hand or the forehead. The mark of the beast is also associated with worship. And remember I said that 3 out of 5 pieces have actually happened. One of the pieces that hasn't happened yet is we don't have a world religion that is evil. And that's going to come. We're living in the time right now when Satan has been working very hard to strip away all of the religious sentiment towards God. And then as soon as people are feeling starved and in need of spiritual sustenance and in need of a religion, he's going to step in with the great religious beast of the end time and say, ah, here it is. This is your wonder guide. He's going to do all the wonderful things for you. Worship him. And when that happens, then we are literally standing on the edge of the mark of the beast.
Jeremy's in Alabama, first-time caller. Jeremy, you're up with us.
Hey, George. Hey, Catherine. How are you?
Good,
hey, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Hey, let's just rewind all this, the mark of the beast. There's one thing that's got to happen, according to Revelations, which I've studied a lot. And I am a Southern Baptist evangelical Christian.
Okay.
That's been saved, that's going to heaven. My citizenship's in heaven. When I die, or the Lord comes back, which that's the first thing that's got to happen. Jesus Christ has got to come back before anything of the seals being opened or the mark of the beast. So if you're a Christian, a born-again Christian, you ain't got to worry about the mark of the beast because the Lord's coming back for you.
But I don't think there are a lot of people like that, Jeremy, though.
You don't think what?
I don't think a lot of people, though, are like you. They're not prepared.
Well, they need to get prepared. If you want to do some praying, you need to be praying for your salvation that you're going to go to heaven.
What do you think of that, Catherine?
Well, the Bible can be interpreted, and in fact, there's a lot of healthy discussion about whether the tribulation comes or the rapture comes before or after the tribulation. It's sort of a pre-tribulation rapture, a post-tribulation rapture. And this is the notion that when Christ returns, he will gather up his people. Now, the Bible tells us that happens. People have interpreted it both ways. The Bible really isn't absolutely certain on this point. You can read it either way, that either the church itself has to go through the persecution, the beheadings, the having to resist the mark of the beast, or the church will be raptured away before that happens. Since we don't know, and since the Bible is not entirely clear on this point, and I don't think anybody can definitively say they've got it right, because half of Christendom says the opposite, I take the viewpoint that we need to be prepared, that we need to be prepared for the possibility that we may actually have to go through the tribulation, that we may actually have to say no to the mark of the beast, and as the Bible says, Christians who say no to that will be beheaded. We need to prepare for that possibility, because if we expect that we're going to be raptured away and then it doesn't happen, what's going to happen is Satan himself is going to say, what happened to your God? He didn't come and rescue you, and now if you don't take this thing, you're going to die, and the God you believed in didn't do what he promised he was going to do. And I think a lot of people are going to fall away if that is the outcome. If the rapture does not come before this, a whole lot of Christians who are counting on it and thinking they don't have to worry about the mark of the beast may find themselves in a really tough position and asking, God, what happened? You didn't do what I expected. So I fully expect that the Christian church will actually be here until the very end. And, you know, could I be wrong? Absolutely. But I think it's a safer way to be wrong, to be prepared, than to be wrong by saying, hey, we don't even have to deal with it.
We now go to Gary in Toledo, Ohio. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I wanted to ask Catherine about the security strips in the American paper currency, if she knows anything about that.
You know, I don't know much about it. I know that it's not RFID, And I know that if you have a large quantity of currency and all those strips are up together, that there are certain devices that can detect them. But that's pretty much all I know. And I also know that it is legitimate that it's for anti-counterfeiting purposes, because it's hard to emulate or mimic or counterfeit those strips.
Well, I was just wondering, because here in Toledo, we see on the news all the time the big drug busts, and they're catching them on the turnpike, and they're showing big piles of drugs that they caught, and always a big pile of money. And somebody that supposedly had a friend in the state police says they have a scanner that can catch that money.
Which may well be the case. If it is the case, we don't officially know about it. I've looked for it, and I haven't been able to find the documentation. But I have heard the same stories that you have, where people said, you know, I legitimately had a big bundle of cash. I was driving down the road, and all of a sudden, the cops surrounded me and wanted to search my car, and they found the cash. So we don't know if those strips are all bundled together in a certain way. Are they sending out a signal that can be picked up? Maybe. I don't know how it's happening, but I haven't seen evidence about it.
Catherine, where are they physically making the chips?
The chips are physically being made primarily in Asia. That's a huge problem, because the way you make an RFID chip is you have to have an antenna, which is kind of like a flat, like it's like a sticker with a flat racetrack of metal running around it. And the way they do it, George, is they put the metal on the sticker, and then they etch away the part they don't want. They dissolve away the part of the metal that's not part of the antenna, and that goes into the wastewater. And we're talking about heavy metals. It's horribly polluting. This is one of the most polluting technologies that there is. Not only does it pollute when it's being created, but it actually destroys the recycling capability of things. If you've got plastic, you know, your number three plastics or your recyclable plastic, mm-hmm. If you've got an RFID tag on the plastic, it destroys the plastic for a recycling perspective and turns it into what they call park bench plastic, which is the lowest rate of junk plastic, because these things are metal. And once they get in there and they melt and they get into the recycling stream, they ruin the recycling. Same thing with glass. Same thing with cardboard, even. Those big stacks of cardboard, if they've got heavy metals in there, that's not good.
Is this nanotechnology?
It's not yet. It's not. So nanotechnology means things that are incredibly small. And so far, at least, RFID requires an antenna, and it's pretty sizable. You know, a lot of people are worried they're going to have an RFID injection when they get their next vaccination. And you can't do that yet. I don't know that they'll ever be able to do it. But RFID actually requires an antenna in order to transmit. And even the ones that are the size of a grain of rice that they can implant in dogs and cats, They don't transmit to satellites. They transmit a maximum of about 6 inches. So if you have one in your dog or cat, and by the way, you shouldn't, and go to chipmenot.com to find out how they've been causing cancer in animals. But if you have one in an animal and the animal gets lost, you're not going to be able to go onto a website and just satellite track it and figure out it's going north on Main Street. The only thing that chip does is if the animal's picked up by a vet or an animal shelter and they hold a reader right over its body within a couple of inches of its neck, they'll get the unique ID number that they then look up in a database. So it's not nanotechnology, and even when it's big, it still has a really short read range unless they put a battery on it.
Let's go to Mackenzie in Canada. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mackenzie.
Hi, how's it going tonight?
Good, thank you.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This is a wonderful conversation. I have really felt this was going to be happening for quite a while.
Well, you're right.
I want to let you know what's going on in Canada.
Okay.
Okay, a couple of years ago, I had to go and renew my driver's license. And when I had it done, they told me that they could put a special chip into my license that would also be for my medical. And they have certain businesses now up here where the employees actually have to put their thumbprint when they, like, check in and out of work.
Or to get through a door.
Yes, exactly.
What's going on there, Catherine?
Yeah, so we're going to see more of this. I remember when I could get on an airplane without having to show ID. Do Do you remember that? You just have a paper ticket, you just get on the plane, and there was no heavy security or anything.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, nowadays you can't even take a bus from here in New Hampshire down to Boston without showing a driver's license. So we're going to start seeing these ID requirements for work where you got to press your thumbprint in. There's even a patent filed by Google for the home of the future. This is how creepy Google is, where they actually talk about having robots that would roam your house and have facial recognition cameras so that they could monitor where you were at all times in your own home. So that if forever, for some reason they couldn't see your face or there was a part of the house that wasn't being monitored by a camera, that they would actually send an alert to law enforcement and say that there was a potential risk in your home because you couldn't be seen. I mean, this is like 1984 where Winston is trying to hide from the telescreen.
George Orwell was just ahead of himself, wasn't he?
He was. You know, he wrote that book in 1948. He transcribed the numbers and called it 1984. And he was still ahead of himself. He was probably about 20, 30 years ahead. I remember reading that book. I was in grade school when I read that book in 1984.
Did you understand it?
You know, I did. But I don't think I saw this. I didn't see this. I don't know that any of us saw that it was going to unfold quite this way. Maybe he did. Maybe he did. But even the telescreen, you know, there's a scene in 1984 when he's hiding in the hallway because the screen can't see him. And these Google Homes of the future, there is no, they call them dark spots or black spots, and you're not allowed to have any. You can't even have a square foot where you can go and be out of range of the cameras. Even the alarm clocks listen to the sounds coming from your bed as you're snoring or talking to your spouse, and they monitor where and when you're sleeping, and they're reporting this to authorities. This is Google's planned home of the future. It's a patent.
I remember back in 1979 in St. Louis, I'm running the news department for a television station here that was owned by the Pulitzer family. Pulitzer Prize, those folks, and they own the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, too. And I remember meeting some of the people from the newspaper side. And one guy, you know, I asked him, I said, so what do you do? And he said, well, I'm in charge of digital. And I went, what's that?
What's
that? It was 1979. I said, so what do you mean you're in charge of digital? Digital what? He said, it's my job to get this newspaper digital on the internet.
Oh my gosh.
And it was over my head, Catherine. I just didn't understand it. But they were so far ahead of themselves because they wanted to, you know, create digital. And the problem is, I don't think they understand, because newspaper business has plummeted. I don't think they've understood or they've been able to find out how to monetize digital on the internet, where everybody now is reading. You know, most people aren't reading newspapers anymore. You don't have to get your fingers, black with the ink or anything like that. Everything's going digital, they can't monetize it.
Well, the way they're monetizing it is the way Google's monetizing it. The whole money-making apparatus that funds the internet is based on spying on people. It's based on collecting information about what they do for marketing purposes and then selling access to that information.
And companies are paying for it. Catherine, thanks so much. We've got your websites linked up on coasttocoastab.com. In a moment, the dark side of what? AC/DC? Stick around and find out.